වරප්‍රසාද ප්‍රශ්න පිළිබඳ ප්‍රශ්නයේ ගරු සුසන්ත පුජින මැතිතුමා.
අර නියෝජ්‍ය කතානායකතුමනි, පාර්ලිමේන්තු බලතලහ වරප්‍රසාද පනතේ 22 අන්තය 90 පාර්ලිමේන්තු මන්ත්‍රීක වශයෙන් වරප්‍රසාද කරගැනීමක් සිදු වෙලා තියෙනවා මගේ. ඒක තිරුකුණාමලේ කන්‍යයි පිහිටි උණුවතුරලින් 7 සහ ඒ ආශ්‍රිත චෛත්‍යක හා ගොඩනැගිල්ලක නෂ්ටාවේශ හමු වී ඇති අතර 2011/09/09 දින අංක 1.7.2.3 දරන ගැසට් නිවේදනය මගින් ඒවා සහ එහි අදාළ ප්‍රදේශයේ පුරාවිද්‍යා ආරක්ෂක ස්ථානයක් ලෙස ප්‍රකාශයට පත් කරලා තියෙනවා. 1940 අංක 9 දරන පුරාවිද්‍යා ආඥා පනතට හා 1998 අංක 24 දරන සංශෝධන පනතෙන් ලබා දී ඇති නෛතික ප්‍රතිපාදන වලට අනුව අදාළ නෂ්ටාවේශ හා එහි භූමියේ සියලු බලතල පවතිනුයේ පුරාවිද්‍යා අධ්‍යක්ෂක ජනරාල්වරයා සතුය. එහෙත් එහෙම තිබේදී පසුගිය 2019/07/16 වෙන දින එම ඉඩමට අයිතිවාසිකම් කියන කෝකිලා රමණී නැමැත්තියක හා ත්‍රිකුණාමලයේ ක්‍රියාත්මක වන රාවණා සේනා නැමැති සංවිධානයක් යැයි ආදී පෙන්න කලයි පිල්ලයාර් කෝවිල විසින් යන පිරිස් සිට පිට දිස්ත්‍රික්කවලින් මුලතිව් යාපනයතු දිස්ත්‍රික්කවලින් දේශපාලඥයන් හා ජනතාව බස්වලින් ප්‍රවාහනය කර ත්‍රිකුණාමල දිස්ත්‍රික්කයේ ජනතාව හා එම කණ්ඩායම අතර ගැටුමක් නිර්මාණය කිරීමට උත්සාහයක් දරලා තියෙනවා. ඉන්පසු දිස්ත්‍රික්කයේ සිටින එකම මන්ත්‍රීවරයා සිංහල ජාතිය නියෝජනය සහ අනිකුත් ජාතීන් නියෝජනය කරන සුළු ජාතික මන්ත්‍රීවරයා හැටිය ත්‍රිකුණා දිස්ත්‍රික්කයේ මම පාර්ලිමේන්තුවට මේ පිළිබඳ ප්‍රශ්නයක්ද ඉදිරිපත් කරමින් ප්‍රසිද්ධ ජනමාධ්‍ය ඔස්සේ ඉල්ලා සිටියේ අනවශ්‍ය ජන රාශිගත කිරීම වලින් තොරව කිසිදු ජාතියකට හෝ ආගමකට විශේෂ නොවනසේ පුරාවිද්‍යා නීතිය ක්‍රියාවට නංවන ලෙසයි. එහෙත් මා පාර්ලිමේන්තු වරප්‍රසාද හා කාරක සභා ආදිය යොදා ගනිමින් සිංහල ජනතාව හා දමන ජනතාවට එරෙහිව ගැටුමකට පොළඹවන බවට එම සංවිධාන හා ගත පිරිස් ප්‍රචාරය කරමින් මාහට නින්දා කිරීමට හා හිතාමතා සැලසුම් සහගත ලෙස දමන ජනතාව හා ජාතිවාදී ගැටුම් වලට අකමැති සිංහල අනෙකුත් ජාතීන් අතර මා ප්‍රතික්ෂේප වන ආකාරයේ ක්‍රියාදාමයක නිතර වීම පාර්ලිමේන්තු බලතල හා වරප්‍රසාද පනතේ 22 වගන්තියෙන් හා ආ උපලේඛනයෙන් තහවුරු කර ඇති පාර්ලිමේන්තු මන්ත්‍රීවරයෙකු සතු අයිතීන් කඩකිරීමකි. නැවත මෙම 31 දිනටද ගැටුම්කාරී තත්ත්වයක් ජන රාශිගත කිරීමේ සැලසුමක් ඇති බව තොරතුරු ලැබිලා තියෙන නිසා ඒ තුළින් ඒ දිස්ත්‍රික්කය තුළ ඒ ජාතිවාදී ගැටුමකට මුල පෙරුවොත් ඒක තුළින් මේ අවුරුදු 30ක තිබ්බ අසමගිය සමගි වෙලා දැන් නැවත වතාවක් ඒ අසමගිය ඇති වෙලා ජාතීන් අතර විනාශයක් ඇතිවීමට ඉඩ ඇති බැවින් මේ ලංකාවේ මේ පහුගිය කාල සීමා තුළ කරන නියෝජ කතානායකතුමනි බෝම්බයක් සහරාන් විසින් පුපුරවලා ලංකාවටම මේ විශාල පාඩුවක් වුණා. ජාතීන් අතර අසමගිතාවයක් ඇති වුණා. රැකියාවල් ලක්ෂ ගාණක් නැති වුණා. ඒ දේ වළක්වන්නට කටයුතු කරගෙන එන අතරතුරේ මේ පිළිබඳ වැරදි අර්ථකථන මේ රටේ ආරක්ෂක භාරව ඉන්න ඇමතිවරයා ජනාධිපතිවරයා වෙන්න පුළුවන්, ආරක්ෂක ලේකම්වරයා ඒකේ ඉන්න එක ප්‍රධානියෙක් වෙන්න පුළුවන්, ඊළඟට පොලිස්පති අබ්දාපති ඇතුළු අයගේ ආරක්ෂක මණ්ඩලේ මා විසින් ජාතීන් අතර ගැටුමක් ඇති කරන්නට යනවා කියලා ප්‍රචාරයක් කළා. මම ගිය ජාතීන් අතර ඇතිවන්නට ගිය ගැටුම නිවලා ජාතීන් අතර සමගිය ඇති කරන්නයි. මොකද ත්‍රිකුණාමල දිස්ත්‍රික්කයේ පාර්ලිමේන්තු මන්ත්‍රීවරයෙක් නියෝජ කතානායකතුමනි මට දමිළ සිංහල මුස්ලිම් මේ සියලු ජනගත කොටස් ඡන්දෙ දුන්නා. ඒ නිසා මම ඉල්ලීමක් කරනවා මෙවැනි දේවල් තුලින් මගේ වරප්‍රසාදයක් කඩවෙලා තියෙන නිසා ඒ පිළිබඳව කරුණු විමසලා මට සාධාරණයක් කර දෙන්න ජාතීන් අතර ගැටුම නිවන්නට කියලායි මේ කරදරේ උනේ.
හොඳයි ගරු මන්ත්‍රීතුමා මේ පිළිබඳව ගරු කතා
අවසන් කරනවා. මේ ගැටුමට සම්බන්ධ ජාතීන් අතර කවුරු හරි ඉන්නවා නම් ඒ දිස්ත්‍රික්කය තුළ අන්න ඒ ගැන විමර්ශනයක් කළා ඒ ගැටුම හදන්න කියාට විරුද්ධව රටේ නීතිය ක්‍රියාත්මක කරන්න කියලා මම ඉල්ලීමක්
කරනවා. ඔබතුමා මතුකරු වරප්‍රසාද ප්‍රශ්නය පිළිබඳව ගරු කතානායකතුමා දැනුවත් කළා. ඒ පිළිබඳව එතුමා නියෝගයක් දෙයි. ප්‍රධාන වැඩ කටයුතු ආරම්භයේ යෝජනා පාර්ලිමේන්තු සභානායකතුමා ආණ්ඩුපක්ෂ ප්‍රධාන සංගතතුමා පාර්ලිමේන්තු රැස්වීම අද දිනේ සභාව එකඟද? සභාව කල්තබීම ගරු ආණ්ඩුපක්ෂ ප්‍රධාන සංගතතුමා
නියෝජ්‍ය කතානායකතුමනි සභාව හෙට පෙරවරු 10:30 දක්වා කල්තබීත්වය යෝජනා කරනවා.
කල්තැබීම යෝජනාව ගරු රාජවර්ධෝදයම් සම්බන්ධන මැතුම අනුරබ සම්බන්ධන්
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Speaker.
Order, please.
Reading out my...
Honourable Member, order, please. Mrs. Velappan Gunan of Thailand, who is present at the Speaker's gallery now with Her Excellency Mrs. Chulamani, Ambassador of Thailand, will receive today the Asian Gold Medal of Civilian Bravery of Sri Lanka on behalf of her husband, who gave life to save the school soccer team with the coach who were trapped in the longest cave in Chiang Rai province in Thailand in July 2018. Honourable Member, you can carry on now.
May I commence, Mr. Deputy Speaker, by reading to the House the adjournment motion that I moved today on a matter of urgent public importance. Whereas the constitution of a country is the supreme law of the country, and whereas in democracies the world over, a country is governed on the basis of a constitution framed on the maximum possible national consensus. And whereas Sri Lanka, which is a multi-ethnic, multilingual, multicultural country with a diverse and pluralist society, is not governed on the basis of a constitution framed on the maximum possible national consensus. And whereas Sri Lanka has thus far been governed on the basis of three constitutions, one, the 1947 Thornbury Constitution, framed by the colonial British government without the consent of the people of Sri Lanka. Two, the 1972 First Republican Constitution, framed by the Sri Lanka Freedom Party, the government in power, which was able to muster a two-thirds majority in Parliament without arriving at a consensus with the main opposition party, the United National Party, or the party representing the Tamils of the North and the East, the Federal Party. Three, the 1978 Republican Constitution, framed by the United National Party, the government in power, it was able to muster a two-thirds majority in Parliament without arriving at a consensus with the main opposition party, the Sri Lanka Freedom Party, or the main Tamil party representing the Tamils of the North and the East, the Tamil United Liberation Front. And whereas the Tamil people of the North and the East are a people with a heritage and civilization of their own, and a distinct linguistic and cultural identity, and have freedom, and have historically predominantly inhabited the northern and eastern provinces. And whereas Sri Lanka has just been governed since independence in 1947 under constitutions which did not enjoy the maximum possible national consensus of the diverse and pluralist people of Sri Lanka. And whereas the situation of conflict that has prevailed in Sri Lanka from independence in 1947, including an armed conflict that lasted for 25-30 years, is attributable to the absence of a constitution based on such possible maximum national consensus to suit the needs of a diverse and pluralist society. And whereas Sri Lanka, with a diverse and pluralist society, in the past 70 years has failed to evolve a Sri Lankan identity as a Sri Lankan nation within a united and undivided Sri Lanka. And whereas ever since the enactment of the Second Republican Constitution in 1978 and enforced until the present time, there has been a strong and consistent demand for the repeal of the 1978 Constitution and the enactment of a new constitution. And whereas several commitments made to the people of the country at several elections by political parties and political leaders for the repeal of the Second Republican Constitution of 78 and for the enactment of a new constitution have not been honored, and thereby the mandates granted by the people at the said elections for the repeal of the Second Republican Constitution of 1978 and the enactment of a new constitution have been disregarded and violated. And whereas consequently, the 1978 Republican Constitution, rejected by the people through several democratic verdicts, had been in operation as a supreme law of the country up to the present time, in violation of the will and without the consent of the people. And whereas the elections held in 2015, a mandate was sought and received by the winning candidate for the enactment of a new constitution. And whereas at the said elections in 2015, the main opposition candidate himself sought a mandate to frame a new constitution. And whereas more than 90% of the electorate voted for the framing of a new constitution. And whereas on the basis of the said mandates received at the said elections in 2015, a resolution was adopted in Parliament unanimously on 9th March 2015, which inter alia stated as follows. A. Whereas there is broad agreement amongst the people of Sri Lanka that it is necessary to enact a new constitution for Sri Lanka. B. And whereas the people have the presidential election held on 8th January 2015, given a clear mandate for establishing a political culture that respects the rule of law and strengthens democracy. C. And whereas His Excellency the President, Maithripala Sirisena, has clearly expressed his desire to give effect to the will of the people expressed at the aforesaid presidential election by enacting a new constitution, inter alia, abolishing the executive presidency. D. And whereas it has become necessary to enact a new constitution that inter alia abolishes the executive presidency, ensures a fair and representative electoral system which eliminates preferential voting, strengthens the democratic rights of all citizens, provides the constitutional foundation resolution of the national issue, promotes national reconciliation, establishes a political culture that respects the rule of law, guarantees the people the fundamental rights and freedoms that ensure human dignity, and promises responsible and accountable government. And whereas in terms of the said resolution of 9th March 2016, a committee of the whole Parliament constituted itself into a constitutional assembly. A steering committee and subcommittees were appointed to partake in the framing of a new constitution, which committees, after public consultation and deliberation, have submitted reports to the Constitutional Assembly, which have been debated in the said assembly. And whereas in the past several months, the constitution-making process has for some unknown reason been at a standstill with no signs of any movement, and whereas the continuance in force of the current constitution enacted in 1978 and the failure to adopt a new constitution is tantamount to an arbitrary rejection of the massive mandate granted by the people at the last democratic election for 2015 to frame a new constitution, and is also tantamount to nullifying a unanimous resolution adopted by Parliament in 2016 to frame a new constitution, and is also tantamount to the continued unjust imposition of the Second Republican 1978 constitution on the people of Sri Lanka without their will and consent. And whereas such a course of events would be immensely harmful to the future interests of the whole country and all its people, and whereas it has therefore become necessary to debate this issue in Parliament and ensure that appropriate decisions are made to take forwards the constitutional making process and thereby evolve a constitution based upon substantial national consensus. If a new constitution with a substantial measure of national consensus is not formulated, and if consequently the country is compelled to be governed under a constitution which has been rejected by the people and also unanimously by the present parliament, I submit that Sri Lanka would before long qualify itself to be termed as a failed state, and I submit it is the duty of Parliament to take every step to avoid such a grave calamity. I would now like, sir, to make a few submissions on this motion which I have submitted, and you'll permit me to do that. The Sri Lankan constitution-making process has been long. In 1957, the late Prime Minister S.W. Bandaranaike entered into a pact with the Tamil leader, Mr. S.J. Vichilvanagam. The main provision to the pact were in regard to the creation of regional councils and colonization. One regional council was to be created for the north, two or more regional councils for the east. The regional councils had the power to amalgamate beyond provincial boundaries, and colonization was to be entrusted to the regional councils, including the selection of allottees and the selection of persons working in land development schemes. In 1965, Prime Minister Dudley Sirisena entered into a pact with Tamil leader S. A. Vichilvanagam, dealing substantially with state land, and the provisions are as follows. Land under colonization schemes in the northern and eastern provinces.
Order, please. Order, please. Dealt with order, please.
On the basis of the following.
Honourable Member, order, please. Point of order, Madhavatuma.
In the first instance.
Alut Gamage Mantituma.
Katanakatumani. Ganapur and Namadita. Sabah Ganyamat and Hikiba.
Thank you.
Honorable Member, you can continue now.
Continue, sir.
Yes.
You can continue.
Thirdly, to other citizens in Ceylon, preference being given to Tamil citizens resident in the rest of the island. Both PACs have recognized the special concern of the Tamil people in the northern and eastern provinces. After 1983, there were negotiations with the good offices of India. There were several talks which culminated in the Indo-Sri Lanka Agreement of 29 July 1987. And the main provisions of the Indo-Sri Lanka Agreement were that Sri Lanka is a multi-ethnic, multilingual, plural society consisting of inter alia Sinhalese, Tamil, Muslims and Burghers. Recognizing that each ethnic group has a distinct cultural and linguistic identity which has to be carefully nurtured. Also recognizing that the northern and eastern provinces have been areas of historical habitation of the Sri Lankan Tamil-speaking peoples and have at all times hitherto lived together in this territory with other ethnic groups. So, sir, the distinct identity of the different people who lived in the country was identified. There was an expression of a need to preserve and nurture that identity. And as far as the northern and eastern provinces were concerned, it was accepted that they have been the areas of historical habitation of the Tamil-speaking people. And they were merged into a single unit of power sharing, subject to certain provisions pertaining to a referendum which was never intended to be held. The 13th Amendment to the Constitution followed in 1988. That was the first attempt at constitutional power sharing arrangements. The provincial councils elections, including in a merged northeast, were held in 1988. The main political party of the Tamil people, the Tamil United Liberation Front, did not contest the provincial council elections in 1988 for the reason that the devolution arrangements, the power sharing arrangements under the 13th Amendment were weak and inadequate and needed to be strengthened and enhanced. After the enactment of the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, three successive presidents and governments took steps to strengthen and enhance the 13th Amendment. During President Ranasinghe Premadasa's term in office in 1989, there were the Mangala Munasinghe Sirakkappily proposals, which was a clear advance from the 13th Amendment in power-sharing arrangements. During President Chandrika Bandaranaike Kumarasinghe's term, there were new constitutional proposals tabled in Parliament in August 2000 with Cabinet approval, which was a major advance from the 13th Amendment to the Constitution. Both President Maithripala Sirisena and former President Mahinda Rajapaksa were in the cabinet of Madam Chandrika Bandaranaike Kumaratunga that granted approval for the constitution proposals that were tabled in Parliament. During President Mahinda Rajapaksa's term in office, he appointed an all-party representative committee and a multi-ethnic experts committee. The all-party representative committee, called the APRC, was under the chairmanship of Professor Sisavithana. They have submitted their proposals, which are a clear advance on the 13th Amendment of the Constitution. It would be useful, say, at this stage to refer to the statements made by some leaders of the country in regard to the constitution-making process. The first statement I would refer to, sir, would be the statement made by Professor G.L. Pieris, then Minister for Constitutional Affairs, at a meeting held with the LTTE at Oslo in 2001, between the 2nd and 5th of December 2002, not 2001, said 2002. And this is what he said. Responding to a proposal of the leadership of the LTTE, the parties agreed to explore a solution founded on the principle of internal self-determination in areas of historical habitation of the Tamil-speaking people, based on a federal solution, a federal structure within a united Sri Lanka. The parties acknowledged that a solution had to be acceptable to all communities, and the parties agreed to, on that basis, discuss matters further. Professor G.L. Pieris, sir, immediately after that agreement between the LTTE and the government of Sri Lanka, gave a press conference in the course of which he said, the LTTE is no longer insisting on a separate state, but are looking at a different concept in earnest, and that is internal self-determination. And he went on to explain what that meant. This was power sharing, extensive power sharing, within the framework of one country. No question of secession, no question of separation, but power sharing within the framework of a country. This is what Professor G.L. Pieris said at that press conference. And I quote from the record of that press conference. Then, sir, President Mahinda Rajapaksa, now leader of the opposition, convened a meeting of the All Parties Representative Committee, the APRC, and a multi-ethnic committee of experts. And he made a statement to them, a long statement, on the 11th of July 2006. I will read only the relevant parts, sir. He said, the unity, territorial integrity, and sovereignty of our country must be preserved. They cannot be opened to bargain. Our approach has been widely endorsed by the international community notably India and the co-chairs, have clearly stated and have clearly ruled out any form of division of the country. Our objective must be to develop a just settlement within an undivided Sri Lanka. He went on to further say, sir, in the course of his speech at that meeting with the APRC and the multi-ethnic expert committee, the people in their own localities must take charge of their destiny and control their politico-economic environment. Central decision-making is that allocates disproportionate resources have been an issue for a considerable time. In addition, it's axiomatic that devolution also needs to address issues related to identity as well as security and socio-economic advancement without over-reliance at the center. In this regard, it is also important to address the question of regional minorities. Further on in his statement, he said, sir, any solution must be seen as one that stretches to the maximum possible devolution without sacrificing the sovereignty of the country. Given the ground situation, given the background to the conflict, it therefore behoves on particularly the majority community to be proactive in striving for peace, and there must be a demonstration of a well-stretched stand of accommodation. That is precisely what we want President opposition leader Mahinda Rajapaksa to do now. As the leader of the majority community, we want him to be accommodative with a hand that is stretched out to bring about genuine reconciliation amongst the peoples of this country. He went on to say, in the course of that statement, to further say, any solution must address these expectations as well. The role of the APRC, as well as the panel of experts, is to fashion creative systems of government and satisfy the minimum expectations that I've enumerated earlier, as well as provide a comprehensive approach to the resolution of the national question. He wanted the APRC and the multi-ethnic committee of experts to address the issue on the basis of views expressed by him, which he said were minimum expectations. They even could go beyond that. And he wanted a solution on that basis. That was said by the Mahinda Rajapaksa, former President Mahinda Rajapaksa, present the opposition leader. Then, sir, shortly after the war ended, the Secretary General of the UN, Mr. Ban Ki-moon, arrived in Sri Lanka, and there was a meeting between him and President Mahinda Rajapaksa, after which there was a joint statement made by him. And he said in that joint statement, sir, made by President Mahinda Rajapaksa and Secretary General Ban Ki-moon on 23rd May 2009.
President Mahinda Rajapaksa and the Secretary General agreed that addressing the aspirations and grievances of all communities and working towards a lasting political solution was fundamental to ensuring long-term socio-economic development. President Mahinda Rajapaksa expressed his firm resolve to proceed with the implementation of the 13th Amendment, as well as to begin a broader dialogue with all parties, including the Tamil parties, in the new circumstances to further enhance the process and to bring about lasting peace and development in Sri Lanka. This was a commitment made by President Mahinda Rajapaksa to the Secretary General of the UN. When the Secretary General of the UN came to Sri Lanka just after the war came to a close, largely to address the question of accountability and to give his mind to what had happened during the final stages of the war. Now, sir, President Rajapaksa, in the course of the statement that he made to the APRC, referred to India and the co-chairs and the international community as being against division and as being for a solution within the framework of an undivided country. I wish to refer, sir, to the quotations of some Indian leaders, Prime Minister Manmohan Singh, Prime Minister Narendra Modi, India's Foreign Minister spokesman, of course, what Prime Minister Rajiv Gandhi, the former late Indian Prime Minister, contemplated is contained in the Indo-Sri Lanka agreement. I don't have to quote that. Prime Minister Manmohan Singh, sir, in November 2008, said what I'm going to quote now in regard to the Tamil question in Sri Lanka. "We are deeply concerned," I explained to him, meaning Rajapaksa, "that we have legitimate concern about the welfare of Sri Lankan Tamils. It has a bearing on Sri Lanka's relations with India." Not anybody concerned about the well-being of the Sri Lankan Tamils. It had a bearing on Sri Lanka's relations with India. Then, sir, in June 2001, Dr. Manmohan Singh, the Prime Minister of India, made a statement in regard to Sri Lanka. And I quote from that statement he made, sir. "We have a situation in Sri Lanka. The decimation of the LTT was something good. But the Tamil problem does not disappear with the defeat of the LTT. The Tamil population has legitimate grievances. They feel they are reduced to second-class citizens. And our emphasis has been to persuade the Sri Lankan government that we must move towards a new system of institutional reform where the Tamil people will have a feeling that they are equal citizens of Sri Lanka and they can lead a life of dignity and self-respect. So Dr. Manmohan Singh, the Prime Minister of India, was very clear in regard to the plight of the Tamils in Sri Lanka. And he was very clear in regard to what needed to be done. The co-chairs of the situation in Sri Lanka, co-chairs comprised of the European Union, Japan, USA, and Norway. They expressed their views in regard to Sri Lanka. Prime Minister, President Rajapaksa said that they were against separation. Yes, they were against separation. But they also expressed their view in regard to what the solution should be. The coach has said on the 30th of May 2006, it must show, meaning that Sri Lanka must show, that it is ready to make a dramatic political change, to bring about a new system of governance which will enhance the rights of all Sri Lankans, including the Muslims. The international community will support such steps. Failure to take such steps will diminish international support. They went on to say, the co-chairs went on to say, sir, in the course of the same statement, the Tamil Muslim people of Sri Lanka have justified and substantial grievances that have not been adequately addressed. They are very clear in regard to that matter. Then, sir, before I move on to some other matters, I would like to refer to what one of the co-chairs, an important co-chair, USA, Assistant Secretary of State of the U.S. for South and Central Asia, Mr. Vijay Boucher, was in Sri Lanka on the 1st of June 2006. And this is what he said, sir, in the course of an important statement that he made. We also think the government should provide a positive vision to Tamils and Muslims of a future Sri Lanka, where their legitimate grievances are addressed and their security assured. President Rajapaksa has spoken of maximum devolution. Previous negotiations have agreed on internal self-determination within a federal framework. However, that is expressed, it could offer hope to many in the north and east that they will have control over their own lives and destinies within a single nation of Sri Lanka. He went on to further state, although we reject the methods of the Tamil Tigers have been using, there are legitimate issues that are raised by the Tamil community, and they have a very legitimate desire, as anybody would, to be able to control their own lives, to rule their own destiny, and to govern themselves in their homeland, in the area they have traditionally inhabited. So, sir, while the international community, while India, the co-chairs have all expressed separation, they've also very clearly stated the sort of political solution they have in mind. Before I conclude with the international community, sir, I would also like to refer to some of the statements made by the Foreign Minister of India after interacting with the President
the foreign minister and the government of Sri Lanka. The spokesman of the Foreign Ministry of India, sir, in the course of a statement said on 22nd December 2011, and I quote from that statement pertaining to Sri Lanka, "In this context, we have been assured by the government of Sri Lanka on several occasions in the past of its commitment towards pursuit of a political process through a broader dialogue with all parties, including the Tamil National Alliance."
Order, please. Honourable Member, would you like to continue or can we stop for lunch and then start at 1:30 again?
What do you think? Carry on, sir.
Yes, then
there should be what time are you adjourning for lunch?
12:30, sir.
May I go on to 12:30, sir?
Continue on.
If you like, we can continue until you finish your speech and then get it. Get the motion seconded by Honorable Adekar Nathan.
Right.
Abutuma, Yojana.
Anybody said, I'll repeat that. In this context,
order, please.
Assured by the government.
Order, please. ගරු ආණ්ඩුපක්ෂ ප්‍රධාන සංගමතුමා එතුමායි කතාව අවසන් වෙනකන් අවස්ථාව දීලා ඊට පස්සේ මේ යෝජනාව සම්මත කරගන්න අවස්ථාව දෙන්න ඔබට මාත කාලී යෝජනා කරන්න පුළුවන්.
ඔව් අපි ඒ විදිහට කටයුතු කරන්න යෝජනා
කරනවා. සභාව එකකද? Right. Thank you. You can continue.
No lunch. We just go on.
Right. In this context, we have been assured by the government of Sri Lanka on several occasions in the past of its commitment towards pursuit of a political process through a broader dialogue with all parties, including the Tamil National Alliance, leading to the full implementation of the 13th Amendment to the Sri Lankan Constitution, and to go beyond so as to achieve meaningful devolution of powers and genuine national reconciliation. That was the statement made by the foreign spokesman on behalf of the Foreign Ministry of India. I refer to another statement, sir, made by the Foreign Minister of India, S.M. Krishna, on the 4th of August 2011. In the course of that statement, he said, "The External Affairs Minister of Sri Lanka affirmed his government's commitment to ensuring expeditious and concrete progress in the ongoing dialogue between the government of Sri Lanka and representatives of the Tamil parties, and their devolution package, building upon the 13th Amendment, would contribute towards creating necessary conditions for such reconciliation." That was a statement made by the Foreign Minister of India. And thereafter, once again, sir, the Foreign Minister of India was in Sri Lanka between the 16th and 19th of January 2012, in the course of which he interacted with both the President and the Foreign Minister of Sri Lanka, Professor G.L. Pieris. And the course of a statement that he made while he was in Sri Lanka, and he made this statement in the presence of Minister of External Affairs of Sri Lanka, Professor G.L. Pieris. The government of Sri Lanka, I quote, "The government of Sri Lanka has on many occasions conveyed to the government conveyed to us its commitment to move towards the political solution based upon the full implementation of the 13th Amendment to the Sri Lankan Constitution and building on it so as to achieve
meaningful devolution of powers. So this was the, if you say that the international community, the co-chairs, India, were all opposed to division of the country, that's perfectly true. But at the same time, they're very clear in regard to what needs to happen. They're very clear in regard to the fact that the present position cannot continue. And before I conclude on these matters, I might, in a moment, Professor GLP is the foreign minister of Sri Lanka, sir. Around about this time, also made a statement. He made the statement when he went to India in May 2011. He was in India from 15th of May to 17th of May. And this is a statement he made. In this context, the External Affairs Minister of Sri Lanka affirmed his government's commitment to ensuring expeditious and concrete progress in the ongoing dialogue between the government of Sri Lanka and representatives of the Tamil parties. A devolution package building on the 13th Amendment would contribute towards creating the necessary conditions for reconciliation. So even Professor G.L. Peris, in the course of a statement he made while interacting with India, affirmed his commitment, his government's commitment to fully implementing the 13th Amendment and building on the 13th Amendment so as to achieve meaningful dialogue, meaningful devolution. And that has been exactly the position of the co-chairs, USA, India, prime ministers, foreign ministers. That is the position that they have all taken up. I draw attention to these matters, sir, for the reason that both President Mahinda Rajapaksa and Professor G.L. Peris are playing an important role in the process related to the formulation of a new constitution, and to make clear to all concerned that the present efforts do not in any way exceed what they were prepared to agree during their term in office when they made such statements. Earlier positions of political leaders need to be made public for the people to be made aware that their present position is different from their earlier position and that there is no merit in their present criticism. So the armed conflict in Sri Lanka between 25 and 30 years was a very severe conflict. I would like to briefly refer to the LTTE. I think it's relevant, sir. After independence, the Tamils demanded equal rights regarding citizenship, language, land, economic development, education and employment. They were subjected to violence.
the law was not enforced, the Tamils did not retaliate, Tamils began to leave the country. To date, around 50% of the Tamils who lived in Sri Lanka have left the country and live all over the world. Agreements entered with Tamil leaders were breached. Tamils were defenseless. LTT manifested itself in the early 1980s, well nigh 30 years after the country attained independence, and during which period the Tamil issue had become a matter of serious concern. If the Tamil issue had been resolved amicably with Tamil political leadership after independence, during the 3 decades after independence, LTT would never have emerged. LTT was militarily defeated in May 2009. International community, India, United States of America, the European Union, the United Kingdom, and several other countries helped the Sri Lankan government to defeat the LTT. LTT was not merely banned in those countries as a terrorist organization. The international community crippled the activities of the LTT. This was on the assurance of the Sri Lankan government that the LTT was an impediment to a negotiated settlement and that a reasonable solution would be arrived at once the LTT was defeated with international help. The Sri Lankan government has now relaxed under said commitment. 10 years have ended since the LTT was militarily defeated. A reasonable political solution has not yet been arrived at. The Tamil people continue to live as second-class citizens. I'm happy my friend Dalasaleb, Honorable Dalasaleb Perumai, has come here. It's time for people like you. I know you're very progressive. You've got very forward views. To take an interest in this matter and resolve this matter. If you want to save Sri Lanka from calamity, otherwise Sri Lanka will be destroyed. And I don't want to be a part of that. Ten years have ended since the LTT was militarily defeated. Reasonable political solutions not been arrived at. The Tamil people continue to live as second-class citizens. It is respectfully submitted that the international community cannot be mere spectators to Tamils being treated as second-class citizens. We respectfully submit that the international community politically, diplomatically and economically must influence the Sri Lankan government to come up with a reasonable political solution. If the international community does not do so, a grave injustice would be perpetrated on the Tamils. It would appear that the international community helped Sri Lanka, the Sri Lankan government, to defeat the LTT. And then the Tamil people were betrayed. Sir, I'm happy Honorable Sripal Tilvi has walked in now. He knows the effort we made to find a solution during the Mahinda Rajapaksa term. He was the leader of the government team. I led the Tamil team. And he knows about how much we tried. So don't blame us. If we don't do it, we will be compelled to take certain actions. And if we do that, don't blame us. So before independence, the Tamils did not ask for separation. Tamils advocated full Swaraj, full independence for the whole country. After independence, the Tamils only sought effective power-sharing arrangements. This was the consistent democratic verdict of the Tamil people at every election since 1956.
The following says a quotation from the election manifesto of the Federal Party in 1970. In proof of this, I read it to show that we even put this into our election manifesto. Our election manifesto said, it's our firm conviction that division of the country in any form would be beneficial neither to the country nor to the Tamil-speaking people. Hence, we appeal to the Tamil-speaking people not to lend their support to any political movement that advocates the bifurcation of the country. That was the position of the Federal Party, quite explicitly stated in its election manifesto in 1970. Make our Rangira one more again. It was only after the enactment of the first Republican Constitution that the Tamils, for the first time in 1976, demanded the restoration of their sovereignty. This was done after they failed to achieve even minimum political goals. On the advice of India, this demand was given up in a short time. After the enactment of the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, the political demand of the Tamil people has been an effective power-sharing arrangement within the framework of a united, undivided Sri Lanka. I repeat, sir, the consistent political demand of the Tamil people has been an effective power-sharing arrangement within the framework of a united and undivided and indivisible Sri Lanka. You have denied that to us. That is why there is no peace in this country. That is why there is no development in this country. That is why there is no investment in this country. That is why nobody will turn and look at this country. We want this country to be a powerful country, a country that achieves progress, resolve the Tamil issue through proper constitutional arrangements. It will be useful in the context of this dispute being unresolved for several decades to refer to certain international instruments. I refer firstly to the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights.
You have three more minutes.
The International Covenant says all people have the right of self-determination. By virtue of that right, they freely determine their political status and freely pursue their economic, social, and cultural development. The Tamil people are entitled to the right to self-determination. Secondly, sir, I refer to the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights. We say it again, all people have the right of self-determination. By virtue of that right, they freely determine their political status and freely pursue their economic, social, and cultural development. Sir, self-determination is categorized as internal self-determination and external self-determination. There was a famous case in Canada, in the Canadian Supreme Court, pertaining to the province of Quebec. Quebec wanted to secede from Canada and sought to secede unilaterally from Canada. The Canadian central government and the other provinces opposed it. The matter was referred to the Supreme Court of Canada. I've got the judgment of the court here with me here, sir. I won't read it, but I will say what the judgment says. The court, having inquired into the matter, stated that self-determination had either internal self-determination or external self-determination. People have the right to self-determination. But if the people have the right to internal self-determination within their own state, which means that they have access to governance, they're able to maintain their self-respect and dignity and fulfill their political, civil, cultural, economic aspirations, then they have self-determination. And people who have self-determination, internal self-determination, are not entitled to external self-determination. Supreme Court ruled that in that context, the people of Quebec, the state of Quebec, had no unilateral right to secede, because they had internal self-determination within their own state. But if you deny the Tamil people the right to internal self-determination persistently and consistently, and the Tamil people are treated as second-class citizens, we as a distinct people with a distinct cultural and linguistic identity, with a tradition and civilization of our own, we will be entitled to external self-determination on account of your default. So please remember that. It will be a grave error on your part not to remember that. The third instrument I want to refer to, sir, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which contains some very important...
You have to conclude now, sir.
...conditions. I'll go on, sir. I'll finish soon. I won't take many...
How many minutes do you need more, sir?
The Universal Declaration of Human Rights...
We have given you... I have... The allocation is 59 minutes.
I should finish in the next 10 minutes, sir. Maybe even before that.
The allocation given to you is 59 minutes, which you have taken now.
I should finish in the next 10 minutes.
Because the motion has to be seconded by Honorable Adekal Nathan before lunch.
You see?
Can you conclude in 5 minutes, sir?
Before lunch, sir.
Can you conclude in 5 minutes?
You can finish it before lunch.
5 minutes.
I should finish it. Yes. Okay. He won't be long in seconding it, sir. This is what the Universal Declaration of Human Rights says. The will of the people shall be the basis of the authority of government. Clause 3, sub-clause 3 of Article 21. The will of the people shall be the basis of the authority of government. This will shall be expressed in periodic and genuine elections, which shall be by universal and equal suffrage, and shall be held by secret vote or by equivalent voting procedure. The will of the people shall be the basis of governance, shall be the authority of governance. From 1956, the Tamil people in the north and the east have voted for a change in the system of governance. Tamil people have consistently said that we are not prepared to accept the present constitution. But we have not granted us internal self-determination, and we are continuing to demand that we are entitled to internal self-determination. So we are all aware that Sri Lanka committed itself to a political solution in the resolution adopted at the UN Human Rights Council in October 2015. The resolution adopted by the UN Human Rights Council, sponsored by Sri Lanka, unanimously states as follows. Welcomes the commitment of the government of Sri Lanka to a political settlement by taking the necessary constitutional measures. Encourages the government's efforts to fulfill its commitments on the devolution of political authority, which is integral to reconciliation and the full enjoyment of human rights by all members of its population. So that was another commitment made by you to the international community. So the motion that I've referred to, that I've read, sir, also refers to the Parliament of Sri Lanka being converted into a constitutional assembly. And the reasons and objectives of that step. Much work has been done under the present resolution moved in this Parliament by the Constitutional Assembly, the Steering Committee, the subcommittees, the Expert Committee. This is comparable with the work done by President Ranasinghe Premadasa under the Mangala Munasinghe City Committee proposals, President Chandika Bandaranga Kumarasinghe under the August 2000 proposals, President Mahinda Rajapaksa's own proposals under the Professor Tissavithanan APR3 report. There has been substantial consensus built around these proposals. The current process is proceeding well, but is now experiencing delay. The present process has three objectives. One, the executive presidency. Two, electoral reform and the preferential vote. Three, a national question, sharing powers of governance, devolution. If there is delay in regard to one and two, then three on which there is substantial consensus can be proceeded with and finalized. There is a fear amongst the Tamil people that the aggressive implementation of a policy of advancing a singular Buddhist environment and influence in the Northeast is the cause for the delay in the process of devolving power being finalized. If that be so, it is a very short-sighted policy and must be abandoned. But we ourselves are beginning to fear that such a policy is being rather insidiously pursued. I would like to remind the House, sir, that if the adjournment motion is not being brought in a spirit of confrontation. Since 1989, much work has been done over a period of 30 years to enhance and strengthen the 30th Amendment, around which efforts there has been much consensus and commonality that it could be unwise to make use of all that, not to make use of all that material. The Mangala Munasinghe Select Committee proposals during President Premadasa's term, President Chandrika Bandaranga Kumarasinghe's August 2000 proposals, Professor Tissavithanan's APRC report during President Mahinda Rajapaksa's term, were valuable efforts, in all of which the SLP was involved. These and the current steering committee, subcommittee, experts committee reports, around which again there is sufficient consensus, provide us with adequate material to build the necessary constitutional structure on development, on devolution, power sharing. The alternative will be that we continue to be governed under the 1978 Constitution, which has been rejected by the people and by the Parliament. This can only be harmful to the whole country and all its people. It's our respectful submission that, in view of the consensus and commonality that exists on devolution, power sharing, the same must be completed due to the term of the present Parliament. In view of all that has happened in the past 30 years, the institution of the state, must not be seen to fail in this regard. Without constitutional reforms and devolution of power, power sharing, thereby the national question being addressed constitutionally, there can be no progress in any other sector. Peace and permanent security would be elusive. Devolution of power to different levels would help to greatly minimize extravagance, waste and corruption. The view also prevails in the country that concentration of power at the center is meant to facilitate corruption. Corruption on a wide scale, if the charge that has been leveled against all governments, whichever party was in power.
You have to conclude now, please.
Yeah. I'm finishing up, sir. I will, at this point of time, sir, before I conclude, I won't quote them in detail, refer to the statements issued by the Lesson Learned and Reconciliation Commission and the Friday Forum. Lesson Learned and Reconciliation Commission was appointed by you. They comprised of very leading members of civil society. The Friday Forum comprised of members of leading members of civil society. Both those institutions have urged you very strongly to come up with your constitution, new constitution, to come up with devolution proposals to enable the national question to be resolved. They are very, very respected, highly qualified persons of civil society. It will be a mistake on your part not to do that. Please do something in terms of the request made by the LLRC, Reconciliation Commission, and the Friday Forum. Before I conclude, sir, very briefly, just give me 2 minutes. Looking back at the whole issue, process of constitutional reform have been on the anvil from 1957. 1957, Prime Minister Sabyasachi Bandaranaike. 1965, Prime Minister Dadisala Nayake. 1987, President Gyarji Abodhyam. 1988-1989, President R. Premadasa. 1994-2000, President Chandrika Bandaranaike Kumarasinghe. 2006-2010, President Mahinda Rajapaksa. 2015-2019, President Maithripala Sirisena, Prime Minister Ranil Wickremesinghe. He was also Prime Minister in 2001 and 2002 when certain things happened. If you do not come up with the Constitution, if you do not keep your commitment to the international community, if you want this country to be ruled under the 1978 Constitution, before long, you will be ruling the country under a Constitution which has been rejected from 1994 at 5 parliamentary elections, including the last election held in 2015, both presidential and parliament. If we rule this constitution for such a long period under a constitution rejected by the people without their will and consent, you will qualify to become a failed state. You will cease to be a legitimate state. If you do not keep your commitment to the international community, you have made several commitments to the international community, you will still lose international legitimacy. You will increasingly become even internationally an illegitimate state. We are a distinct people with a distinct linguistic and cultural identity. We have historically inhabited the North and the East. We cannot live as second-class citizens. We must live with self-respect and dignity. Maximum possible power sharing must be effected. Power must be devolved within a united, undivided, indivisible Sri Lanka. We must be able to determine our destiny. Our leaders have said it. The single leaders in this country, whom I have referred to very adequately today, they have said it. International leaders have said it. Prime Minister of India, I have not referred to Prime Minister Modi's statement on account of the fact that we are rushing, sir. But Prime Minister Modi has said the only way to keep a country united is to ensure that all its citizens are able to live with self-respect and dignity. All its citizens are able to fulfill their aspirations. And he said, I want to strengthen every village. I want to strengthen every state in my country, because it is only when others acquire strength within my country that our center becomes strong, the country becomes strong. So please remember this, and the earlier you do it, the better. But if you do not do it and abstain from doing the right thing, I do not think the Tamil people will take it lying down for too long. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.